Welcome to Let's Talk About Gay Stuff.
Woo!
Woo-hoo.
What? Kendall hates it. He hates the jingle.
We're the podcast where we talk about gay stuff and discuss the week in LGBTQ plus history.
Whoop.
Whoop, whoop. We are Thomas.
Tony.
Kendall.
And this week we're reviewing the week of November 15th through the 21st. We'll discuss such topics as the gay icon Carly Rae Jepsen, Jodie Foster, and Phyllis Fry. Wow, these are going to be fun topics.
All female episode.
All female. What? Before we get into our topic, so let's talk about baked bones. A recent Gallup poll shows that Americans have reported feeling stress, worry, and anger at the highest levels in over a decade. And while we're growing more and more aware of the effects of stress on our bodies and our minds, we may not have considered the effects that our stress can have on our pets. That poor little Morky. That poor little Kennedy.
Marco.
That poor little chocolate. And while we're growing more and more aware of the effects of stress on our bodies and minds, we may not have... Oh, I already said that, right? According to a 2019 study, there's a synchronization between stress hormones and humans and their dogs. And if you're a dog parent, which we all are, we probably already know that our pups are very good at reading our body language and can quickly pick up on how you're feeling. We're always looking to reduce our own stress in any way we can, but what about the anxiety we may have passed on to our little puppies? Baked Bones has a solution. CBD has been shown to help reduce stress and anxiety in both humans and dogs, and Baked Bones has your dog covered. Made from organic, human-grade ingredients and full spectrum hemp oil.
Spectrum
hemp oil.
Spank, woof.
Their bones may offer some relief
spank
to your
dog.
Anxious pup. Check out bakedbones.com for more information on CBD for dogs and other benefits it may provide. Baked Bones offers free shipping on all orders over $25. And you can save 15% using the promo code GAYSTUFF15. That's GAYSTUFF15. Baked Bones is LGBTQ owned and operated and is based in H-Town, Houston, Texas.
Woo!
Baked Bones is now available in Man Ready Mercantile and is based, which those stores are in Houston and in Austin, so check them out. Baked Bones proudly donates 10% of all of its profits to no-kill shelters in the U.S. Baked Bones, baked dogs, happy.
Woof.
All right, so what's going on, ladies?
Oh, well, by the way, yeah. I wouldn't tell y'all this, breaking news.
All right.
Engage.
So I have a little CBD bottle that you gave me from Baked Bones for the dogs.
Yeah.
But humans can have it.
Have you been taking it?
Yes. I've been putting that on my tongue.
No, it's human great ingredients. Yeah.
So I've been taking the CBD and I feel like a new man.
Oh, isn't it amazing?
I'm not sure Baked Bones would be endorsing that, but, you know. Whatever.
Well, they don't have to.
It's they CBD. Always tell me it's human grade ingredients. I'm like, sure. Shit.
It's calmed me a lot. I stopped biting myself.
You're going to stop biting at your ass all the time?
Yeah, my rocket doesn't.
Your red rocket's not showing. Oh, my gosh. What's going on? Anything exciting in your lives? You're reading anything pandemic fun? Any fun hobbies you picked up? I can't believe we've been... I mean, so here we are in the week of November 15th through 21st, right?
And pandemic for like 10 months.
Yeah.
No, or 8 months. No hobbies for me.
No, it's like, is that, what were three,
eight
11?
Months.
8 months.
Okay, 8 months. So no hobbies for me.
No pandemic babies.
Everybody else is losing weight, picking up all these hobbies. I'm like...
I don't know who's losing weight. I feel like everyone's gaining weight.
I know two people that lost weight during the pandemic.
You what?
I know two people that lost weight during the pandemic.
Who?
My friend Mark and my friend Chris, his girlfriend Lauren. All right. Everybody else gaining
weight. Well, she had an amputation.
Yeah, I was about to say she got divorced.
Cute. She's New Orleans. She's cute.
All right. So what about
she's
you?
A Robichaux.
So a Robichaux?
Robichaux.
So you said that you've lost weight. What's been your secret? Tell us.
Less drinking, believe it or not.
Oh yeah. And the pandemic.
That's and I wasn't good. Even drinking a lot. But I would drink on the podcast once a week.
Oh, that's why our ratings dipped.
And then less you fast food too. And less peanut butter and jelly sandwiches because I had addiction.
Really?
Yeah. One time I ate an entire loaf of bread for peanut butter and jelly sandwiches before noon.
I would say this. Peanut butter and jelly sandwiches are no bueno. And I've been through phases before where I'm like, oh my God.
It's all sugar, right?
There's protein because there's peanut butter, but it's like so that's delicious. Really fattening.
It's not fitting. Oh my! A whole that's loaf. Not filling. I mean,
a no, it's loaf. Like yes, 600 calories, and but you're hungry in like 20 minutes.
So yeah. What are you eating now? I'm curious.
Thomas.
Yes.
I mean,
well, you know he's married to an Asian, so you know what he's eating.
What he cooks, we cook together. So we nibble on little.
You supervise. He cooks.
No, we cook together.
All right.
I mean, cute. He cooks mostly, but he cute. Really enjoys it. So I just let him have his thing, you know? I'm like,
you don't want to impose.
I don't want to get in the way of your cooking. So I'm just going to sit over here. And then I'm like, I'm just going to go sit over there in the TV room. And it's like, can you stop being so loud in there? And I'm like, why don't you go ahead, why don't you go ahead and bring me a drink real quick? You know, because I think that
give
would
give me a martini and order me Taco Bell. Thank you.
Before you know it, I'm helping out a lot.
That's good. Well, so last week we talked about Joe Biden and Kamala Harris winning. What? Although we're recording this a week ahead, so I just hope everything still stays the same.
I hope there's no riots and fucking uprising from Trumps.
Well, that's your problem. You're not hoping for rises. You need to be hoping for more rises, Tony. And then you can be single. But there were some big movements.
Lay hands on it.
On the LGBTQ front, and we had a lot of LGBTQ people, a lot of firsts for LGBTQ candidates, which is a big deal, and I think was significant since we had Mayor Parker from the Victory Fund on our episode talking on our podcast talking about some of the candidates that they were supporting. So if we just Delaware, for example, elected its first openly trans state senator, that's anywhere in the nation. We had our first openly LGBTQ Afro-Latino elected to Congress. We have
he's a cutie, too.
Richie Torres.
Ew, who's he?
Richie Torres.
Yeah. Where's he from?
Richie tore me up.
New York City. He's NYC. He's from the Bronx.
They taken?
I think so.
Yeah.
He's got a lot of issues.
Sick of this.
He's in Congress. He has a lot of issues.
He's what?
He's a congressman now. He's got a lot of issues.
Oh, yeah, for sure. We've got the first LGBTQ person of color elected to the New York State Legislature, Jabari Brisport. We've got Georgia has elected their first openly LGBTQ state senator. Georgia was like one of a few states that didn't have any LGBTQ people or LGBTQ senators in their midst. We've got we've got a couple. We talked about Richie Torres, but we've got Mandary Jones, who's also a first black openly LGBTQ person being elected to the House. So some big changes. We've got Kansas giving their first trans official, electing their first trans official.
Get out, Kansas.
Yeah.
Oh. Oklahoma had a non-binary Muslim.
Yes.
Get the fuck out, really.
Tennessee elects an LGBTQ candidate, which is one of like they entered the modern world. There's still like four states that don't have any LGBTQ people elected to any of their position, any like local state positions.
Only four?
Yeah.
Oh, that's progress right there.
Colorado elects its first out bi legislator. We've got lesbian sheriffs that are being elected. We've got Todd Gloria in San Diego. He becomes the first LGBTQ mayor and person of color candidate to be elected to that position. So good stuff.
Wonderful. Oh, we got a toaster.
Progress.
I agree. Progress. That's awesome.
I mean, again, we brought Anise Parker on the show for a reason, right? I mean, it was like talk about what's going on in the LGBTQ world in terms of politics and candidates. And, you know, that Victory Fund is out there supporting all these candidates on both sides of this political spectrum, right? On all sides. People, they turned it out. They made things happen. So that's cool.
That is cool. I mean, it makes us think like, you know, hopefully soon we aren't talking about it's the first, you know, like if we've made all this progress where only four states don't have an LGBT, you know, person serving office. Hopefully at some point it's like, well, we're not talking about first anymore.
I do feel like even going through this list, it was like, oh, I mean, there was first, but it's like, it's not, these are adding to the list. I mean, they're first for certain states, but in our country, these are not first, right? So now we're talking about, oh, well, this is the first gay person of color, or it's the first bisexual of color. It's not like, you know what I mean? It's not like the first gay person ever elected.
Yeah, yeah.
So to me, that's progress. We can't rest. We need more representation. I mean, again, going back to the conversation with Anise Parker, like, we need visibility. We need to be out there running for office. That's the only way our voice gets heard. It's like, yeah, we can vote, but if we're not at the table having, like, setting the agenda, then, you know, we, our issues can get pushed to the side very easily. So,
If you're not on the table, you're on the menu.
Right.
And, if you're not on the table.
If you're not at the table, you're on the menu.
There we go.
If you're on the table, you're on the menu, probably, most likely.
By design. But I feel like this is a good progress. Again, we can't rest. But yeah, we have to keep fighting. And here's the thing, though. I mean, people often with the LGBTQ community, they're like, oh, you're asking for special rights. We're asking for the
equal
same rights.
Equal rights.
We want the same rights. We want to be able to have our job and not get fired just because of the person we love.
I mean, it'd be nice to have our own bathroom, but.
Why? So you can do inappropriate things in there?
No, I just mean if, you know, we need to get privileges.
If you want to. So you can sit while you pee again. I mean, it's not a matter of a special rights. We're just asking for the same rights. That's it. Mm-hmm. That's it. That's all. That's all. Again, I talked about last episode where you can be, now that I'm newly engaged, this matters. But if I wanted to work for this city of Houston.
I'm not worried about it. I'm engaged.
I cannot get Spencer the same rights as my straight friends working for the city of Houston. That's crazy. Freaking crazy.
Have you thought about being straight?
I mean, I'm just kidding. Technically I'm bisexual. So, yeah, I tried it. That's all I can say. Been there, done that, thanks. But yeah, you know. So that's that. It was a big year. Let's see what happens. Let's see what these folks can do in their new positions. Anything else going on? Anything you guys want to share about your lives? No.
You're boring. Same for me.
Tony's boring.
Still a homosexual.
Kendall's boring. No, everyone's boring.
As much as I
Kendall's
pray.
Nesting. Just kidding. I'm boring.
Just kidding. Y'all ain't boring. Y'all ain't boring. Y'all's the puns. All right. Let's talk about some pets, though. If you want a clean pet without all the hassle, you can call up Aussie Pet Mobile of River Oaks, packing up Fido or Morky in your case, or Chocolate in your case. Up in the car, driving them all over town for a grooming is a chore that many of us pet owners rarely enjoy doing. What if instead you could have the groomer come straight to you? With Aussie Pet Mobile of River Oaks, you can! Aussie Pet Mobile has spacious, custom-designed mobile units with all the luxuries of the salon, AC, heat, electricity, and water. No hookups needed, and they never use kennel dryers or harsh chemicals during the grooming process. Their vans ensure that your groomer's ability to take care of all of your pet's needs, including hair care to paw care and everything in between, are all secured and safe. They even have special services such as de-shedding treatments, whitening treatments, hairstyling, dead sea mud baths, take dark color enhancing treatments, and facials. You think I can bring them out to the wedding so they can do all that stuff? They can. I'm just going to call Aussie Pet Mobile. They're going to groom me up.
Can they do humans too?
They're going to glue me up. I'm like, y'all do whitening treatments?
Let me get ready.
Like, I want all that stuff. Like, for the wedding, whitening treatments, yes.
You're like, I want to look my best.
Hairstyling, yes. Dead sea mud baths, you bet. Dark coloring enhancing treatments, for sure. Facials?
They'll express your anal glands.
I thought that was for after the wedding. Their groomers, though, they're trained. Oh, they're trained and certified, and will pamper your pets, not humans, though, with a personal 100% cage-free one-on-one experience, all in the comfort of your driveway, your curbside, your garage, wherever you want them. You know what else Aussie Pet Mobile groomers are trained on?
Good social distancing practices.
Hey! They make your appointment. So make your appointment today and be sure to ask about their contact-free grooming service. All right, let's get into it. Tony, I think you're first up to bat. You're going to talk to us about Phyllis Fry.
Yeah.
We talked about Anise Parker. Phyllis Fry, H-Town native.
Yeah, very close relationship with Anise Parker. And so Phyllis Fry, really, she's a trailblazer in the trans community. So the reason I wanted to talk about her today is she's the first openly transgender judge in the United States. But she really has, like, the reason I wanted to talk about her tonight is two reasons. One, I just kind of want to go over her background and like exactly what she, the discrimination that she faced as a trans person. And then also kind of like the, you know, she was a trailblazer for the trans community, like from a legal perspective and like how to legally navigate, like to try to get, you know, equal rights for trans people. So
full disclosure, one of our sponsors, Economy Works, which I am the founder of that company, one of their lawyers, like I associated with their firm to do, they did help me with my legal work early on. So not in terms of anything wrong, but they helped me set up my company, all that sort of stuff. So
tax evasion.
No, not tax evasion. But so part of the Fry.
Oh, no. Excellent. Yeah. Yeah.
So
yeah.
It wasn't her, but it was one of her associates. So.
Okay. Nice. Yeah. Yeah. Because she was. I'll get into it later, but she was really like, if you were a trans person and wanted to change your name, birth certificate, because, you know, Texas has very strict, you know, she was one of the trailblazers in here's how to legally navigate that. But yeah, so she's actually born in San Antonio, very, you know, she was born in San Antonio in the 40s, very, typical American family where there's rigid gender roles. It's like, you know, when she was like growing up, she's like, oh, my cousin's bake set, I want to play with that. And her parents are like, no, you're a boy, you don't do that. And so she kind of overcompensated like growing up, because, you know, she knew early on that she had indications that she like wanted to be a female. She was born a male. She kind of overcompensated. She swore a lot. She told a lot of dirty jokes, things like that. She, you know, later on in life said, I was so good at being a boy that she goes, I should have won an Oscar. You know, like she just, it was, she felt so much that she was not, but she just had to act like it.
But that's part of her personality. Like you, if, I don't know if you've met her. Or
Yeah, I have. Yeah.
Yeah. I've met her, interacted with her, seen her speak, and, yeah, she carries that swagger. I mean, she didn't. I mean, she may have. I mean, that may, you may be describing that as something she said that was a boy characteristic, but she's like, tell it like it is, no frills.
Yeah, she's a bit kind of lighthearted, but in your face. Yeah.
I mean, very, very personable, but she's like, no nonsense. Like, here's what I got to tell you.
Yeah. So. She went to A&M, Texas A&M, studied engineering. She was in the Corps of Cadets. She got married, had a son, and she went into the Army. And when she was in the Army...
This is why she was presenting as a man.
A man, yeah.
And married a woman.
Yeah, she married a woman. She was a man presenting as a woman, or married a woman. And she had... She was exhibiting, like, trouble in the Army. And so they said, what is going on? Because, you know, growing up, she was an Eagle Scout. Like, she was by the book, you know, like, a good kid, you know, just never caused any trouble. And so they were like, what's going on here? And she said, here's the deal. I'm having marital problems, and it's affecting my work because, you know, I'm like, and she told her supervisors that I struggle with, like, because she was just experimenting with cross-dressing. And they said, well, she was stationed in Germany. They said, go back to the U.S. and go through therapy. So she came back to the United States, and at the request of the Army, went through intensive therapy. And it was like she was... had drugs. It was, she had aversion therapy where it's like, okay, they made her hold like women's underwear and they would induce vomiting. Oh, you know, man. Yeah,
that's
exactly.
Crazy. That's
so
awful.
Yeah, horrendous. So
this was the military doing this?
Yeah. So they said, look, you have to go back and like go through this therapy if you want to save your military career, marriage, whatever. So obviously, so she came back, did this intensive therapy, went back to Germany, and it didn't work, you know, obviously. So, because this is who she was. So, her wife divorced her, took her son, and the military discharged her. And for basically, they didn't even have to hide anything. They were like, look, you're a sexual deviant, you know, you're being discharged. So she did get remarried, and at this point, she, you know, she just knew at a young age that she just felt these urges that she was a woman. And so she was starting to cross-dress, but it was kind of like, well, I'll do it, like, in secret at home or, like, in the evening when nobody will know, things like that. So when she got discharged from the Army and came back, she was an engineer for A&M. She had, like, a master's and a bachelor's degree. Could not find work. Like, every time she found a job, she worked for A&M. And her supervisor found out that she was shopping for women's clothing in College Station, fired her. She had several jobs, and every time she would get a job, somebody would say, oh my God, I heard about her. She got discharged from the military for like cross-dressing, whatever. And so she would get fired. And it's like people could literally say, I heard you were shopping for women's clothing, I'm firing you. She had no option, right? It's like gay people could be fired, like, you know, for any reason. So she actually applied for a government job, part of the process was they interviewed, like, you know, friends and neighbors, and they said, no, we got, you know, vibe, you're a cross-dresser, like, we're not gonna, you know, hire you, things like that. So even her, like, alumni events for the Corps of Cadets, they said, look, because she was born Philip. Philip is always allowed. Phyllis is not. So, you know, she faced quite a bit of discrimination. She couldn't even find work. So when she came back to the U.S., she did remarry. Trish was her new wife, who, you know, she was with for over 40 years. Trish just passed away this year, actually, in 2020. Just a couple of months ago. But after she had lost so many jobs based on, like, rumors of cross-dressing and things like that, Trish just said, just come out. Just be yourself. Do what you need to do. Like, don't worry about all this. Just fully transition, whatever.
Which is a huge deal. I mean, yeah. It's one of those things that it's not like, I mean, I feel like, if you're going to marry, you marry someone who went to A&M, who's a Corps cadet, you have a preconceived notion of what they're going to be.
Yeah.
And so, which is very macho male stereotype, not macho, but very masculine.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And so to be a partner of someone who's going through this transition, for Trish to, like, be so supportive in Texas, like, that's.
And in Texas, because, you know, I'll talk about this, later, but, all this was in Texas in the 70s. It wasn't New York. It wasn't San Francisco. It was Texas. And, you know, to Trish, you know, her point, when they originally got together and Phyllis, you know, would cross-dress once in a while, Trish was like, okay, you know, kind of new to me, you know. She had a level of acceptance. You know, she had to go through and, you know, part of her was like, okay, let me accept this, things like that. But it wasn't like day one. She's like, oh, my God, cool. You know, she had to come to a level of acceptance. And but she did. And she supported Phyllis, you know, through, like, for 40-some years of marriage, obviously. But it is, you know, it is cute. So Phyllis said, when she told me that and I said, okay, I just need to, like, fully transition and be myself, she goes, I put on my skirts and I never took them off. She goes, and it was, she said it was the first time in her life that she just really felt like authentic.
Yeah.
You know, that she felt like, okay, this is me.
That's got to be such like a huge relief to be like, I can finally be myself. Like,
and you know, she was raised such a, you know, you do the right thing. She was an Eagle Scout. So she thought, okay, I don't want my neighbors seeing some strange lady pulling up to the driveway every day and, like, going in the house, like, what's going on there? So she went around to her neighbors and said, hey, you know, I'm, you know, Phyllis, I'm gonna, you know, start, you know, I'm transitioning to be a woman, like, you know, be aware, like, I'm gonna be, you know. Well, of course, it's Texas, you know, in the 1980s, her house is getting egged. There's, you know, spray painted graffiti on the driveway, things like that. Her tires were slashed. Her parents basically said, if you do this, you know, her parents disowned her, and her dad said, if you do this, you are dead to me. And she said he kept his word. Like, he, you know, he never retreated. He kept his word that when he said that.
Good old stubborn dads, huh?
Yeah. Yeah. So she actually went to U of H and got her JD. And the reason she did that, this is interesting to me. She wanted to protect her own rights. Like, she knew as a transgender person, she was facing an uphill battle in everyday life. And she just wanted to know how to legally maneuver life. And if I want to protect my own rights, to, like, at the time, Houston had a cross-dressing ordinance where you couldn't, like, and so she was like, I need to go to law school so that I can, like, legitimately fight against these things versus, you know, just, you know, not have any civil rights. So she went to U of H law school. She was a born-again Christian, and so she, you know, wanted to be part of the Christian Legal Society. They started meeting secretly to avoid her, and she just felt very isolated, even though she was, like, with Trish, and she just felt very isolated that, like, nobody accepted her and things like that. She had actually, previous to this, she had attempted suicide, but, you know, it didn't work, and so she... basically kind of pivoted her life to, like, I'm gonna fight versus, you know, be defeated and just, you know, go away.
Well, thankfully for us it didn't work. I mean, like, yeah. we know her as,
and for the trans community, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, she's done such amazing things.
Yeah.
Like, and
so when she graduated from U of H, which is actually a really good law school, she could not find any work.
That's what somebody from U of H would say.
That's a really good law school.
No, it is. It is a good law school. And when she graduated, nobody would hire her because, you know, she was openly, you know, trans. And she, for a while, she was so poor, the only food that she had was, like, from church donations. Like, she went to her church and said, hey, and they said, well, people donated this food, we'll give it to you. And then she was relegated to, like, she sold Amway household products. And, you know, it, as I was researching this, I didn't really know that level of, like, you know, detail. But, like, you know, we've had Tammy Wallace on who talks about, like, okay, people need to be their authentic selves at work. I'm like, this person, she was a bachelor's and master's in engineering, JD and MBA, she could not contribute to society because she was trans. Like, nobody wanted her to, like, you know, contribute her full abilities. She was selling Amway. And I'm like, a person that qualified selling Amway, it just shows, like, you know, like, yeah. Anyways.
I'll say this, like, because I've met her at one of our collaborators, Houston, Greater Houston LGBT Chamber of Commerce. I met her at one of those events, and she's unassuming. I mean, for her, everything that we're talking, I mean, the fact that we're talking about her, like, she has holds a significant place in LGBTQ history, and she's just unassuming. I mean, she was handing out flyers about, like. My point is,
yeah,
it's not, she's a lawyer, she's done well for herself, but she was handing out,
yeah, she's fly, kind of a, you know, fly, I mean? Under the radar, like, I want to work and get stuff done. Like, you know, she talks, because she's 2 years older than Caitlyn Jenner, and when Caitlyn Jenner came out, she said, I didn't even watch the episode when, you know, she came out, and she said, been there, done that, and she didn't say this, but it kind of implied that, like, you know, I did it because I needed for my own self to just be authentic and live life. Like, I didn't want a big show. I didn't want publicity, whatever. So her, you know, the rest of her career was basically, she did end up getting appointed, like, defense attorney, like, by the city for, you know, certain people that couldn't afford it. And she kind of found her niche. And so she spent many years, like, she was a trial attorney. She was a defense attorney for, you know, publicly appointed. She always wore these outlandish, like, you know, hats, because she said, when I walked into the courthouse, I didn't want the focus to be on, ooh, is she a bit masculine for, like, a woman? Like, what's going on there? So she said, I wore these, like, over-the-top hats, you know. But she became a fixture in Houston's legal community and was a household name. She started her own practice. And when I first got involved in the in politics, when I first moved here, she was the go-to person. Like, if you were trans and you wanted your, you know, name changed legally, because she is one of the first people that, like, you know, contested, like, through Texas of, you don't have to have full sex reassignment surgery to be able to change your name. Like, you should be able to change your name in your birth certificate if you don't have to go through, like, full sex reassignment surgery. Like, you know, if you're a trans person and you're like, well, this is as far as I want to go or can go in the process, because, you know, it's like a multi-year process. Ton of money, right? With all these surgeries.
It's affordability. It's also reproductive rights. I mean, if you transition your sexual organs, you can't have kids. So if you keep your sexual organs, you can. So there's a lot of things. And I mean, honestly, that whole sexual organs, like that aspect of it, I did not fully appreciate until probably the last, like, 6 months. Like, I'm like, oh. I mean, because I admittedly, there's some intrigue. I don't know. It's just the guy in me. It's wrong. I'm not saying it's appropriate, but I was, like, wondering. And then I'm like, when people are explaining, you don't have to care about this because I may have my parts because I want to have kids one day. And I'm like, I did not appreciate that.
A lot of things to think about. But she was a trailblazer. So in her early days, she really spent a lot of time focusing on trying to educate the gay community on, you need to include trans people in your fight. And trans rights are just as important as gay rights. And at the time, gay people didn't realize that. They were like, we have completely different objectives. And it's like, no, we kind of don't. So she, you know, spent the early part of her days trying to educate LGBT groups. You know, she fought, like, Houston, and it took 4 years to get their anti-cross-dressing ordinance repealed. She was really fundamental. So when she, like, the Houston LGBT political caucus, early on, it was not the LGBT. It was, like, just a gay and lesbian caucus. She tried to get them to include trans, and they were not receptive. And so she said, okay. So she started these transgender legal conferences. And her first one, they were in the 90s. She put on her credit card. She said, I put everything on my credit card and I prayed that people would come. And she goes, they did. But basically, it was kind of a, like, she had a bunch of transgender people and legal people, and it's like, okay, what is our legal strategy? How do we legally navigate to get equal rights? And, you know, people were like, this was a lifeline to us because we had no mentors, no role models. Like, everything was in San Francisco, New York. And in Texas, it's like, how do we legally strategize to try to get gay rights? So that's one thing that she was, you know, kind of noted for. So she did kind of organize this nationwide, like, loosely patchwork organization of, like, trans people. And her followers are called the Filibusters, like Phila.
Yes, that's a true gay icon, LGBTQ icon right there.
Yeah. Filibusters.
Have your own little fans. Yeah.
The Busters.
Yeah. She's pretty notorious for going to war with HRC because trying to get them to include trans people. And she did say, she goes, it was a war. You know, she goes, the HRC. And one of the things that she quoted, like, she talked about Sylvia Rivera, who we've talked about previously. And she said it just irritated her that, like, the gay community wouldn't fully accept, like, trans people and their efforts. And she said, you know, all these, like, Gucci-carrying Wall Street people didn't recognize Sylvia Rivera's efforts.
Oh, no, there's a – you have to watch it on YouTube. Sylvia Rivera gives this, like, impassioned speech from the 70s about, like, hey – I mean, people didn't want her. They were booing her on the stage. And she is like, you guys need to know that the trans people have been here since the beginning. We helped you. We are the reason you have.
Yeah. So, anyways, amazing trailblazer. You know, she went through, like, you know, quite a bit. You know, feel bad that she just work wise and personal wise. Sacrifice so much discrimination, you know, I feel bad for her. So she was actually a very close friend of Anise Parker's, and a couple of, like, tidbits. So she and Anise Parker were driving to a state Democratic convention together, and Phyllis was saying, God, you know, I really miss playing sports, but she goes, I'm not allowed, like, no women's leagues will allow me to play, you know, because they're anti-trans. And Anise Parker at the time was a member of the lesbian softball league in Houston. And she goes, I need, like, a, you know, power hitter. She goes, no pun intended. I'm going to, like, go to bat for you to try to get you on my team. So Phyllis was actually the first trans person on the, in the lesbian softball league in Houston. And she was very close friends with Anise Parker. Anise Parker was the one that appointed her. To the municipal courts as a judge. And Anise Parker said she really got teary-eyed when she was being sworn in because, you know, such a milestone. So,
yeah, I mean, so she was the first openly transgender judge
in the United States.
In the U.S.
Yep, in the U.S. Yep.
That's pretty significant.
Yeah, and I will say one thing that, like, I thought of during my research here is, this happened in Texas. Lawrence v. Texas happened in Texas, which gave us, you know, like, you know, repealed all sodomy. Sex. Yeah. Legalized gay sex.
We can have sex now.
Yeah. And I remember when I first got involved in politics in Houston, it's a hard slog, right? Like, working for LGBT rights in the South. I mean, Tammy Wallace said when she first, you know, went door to door for gay rights, it was like a lot of doors were slammed in her face. And it's like, but you're kind of, and a lot of, like, even Anise Parker said this, like, we're needed here. Like, New York, they have plenty of people. LA, plenty of people. Mm-hmm. Here, we are needed, you know? And so Phyllis Fry, it's like, she was like, she's kind of, you know, deemed the grandmother of the trans movement. But, you know, very much more needed in Houston and Texas than she was in, like, you know, a bigger city. So, yeah. Yeah.
Pretty remarkable. Like, she's, again, trailblazer. It's, I love her demeanor. Like, she's just,
and she said she never set out to be a trailblazer. Like, she set out to be like, I don't want to get arrested for being dressed as a woman in Houston. I need to go to law school and figure out, like, you know, how to fight for my own rights. She never was like, oh my God, I want to be like the trans. Yeah.
Yep. Well, cool. Well, thanks for sharing that. I she's been on the calendar. I'm like, we have to talk about her, especially since we've met her. Like, that's cool. What a remarkable trailblazer. All right. A quick note about AIDS Foundation Houston. They're hosting their annual World's AIDS Day Luncheon on December 1st. However, this year, things are going to be a little bit different because we are in the land of COVID. For 2020, World AIDS Day will be a virtual experience. AFH was founded in 1982 and has continued to serve the evolving needs of those living with and affected by HIV and AIDS in the community. AFH's World AIDS Day Luncheon was a finalist for the best fundraising event in the city of Houston by Outsmart's 2020 Gayest and Greatest. On December 1st, the event will be hosted live by Ernie Manus from B Design. The show will include celebrity cameos and interviews. They'll have pop-ins by AFH staff and board. Will feature Mayor Sylvester Turner, Judge Lena Hidalgo, Lena Hidalgo, client and community testimonials, award honorees, drag and musical performances, and so much more. We, at Let's Talk About Gay Stuff are proud to be media partners and hope that you will join us in the fight to end the HIV epidemic in Houston by supporting World AIDS Day 2020, a virtual event. Access to the event starts at just $5, and underwriting opportunities, if you're interested, start at $500. Please visit worldaidsdayhouston.org to learn more. All right, Kendall, let's hear about Jodie Foster.
Yep, my topic is Jodie Foster. Surprise, she's a lesbian.
Well, she didn't tell us till she was 60 at the Golden Globes. That's a punchline.
That's my whole topic now.
Thank you for seeing this.
But she is the original thespian lesbian.
Everybody knew all along.
She was the thespian lesbian. And she was born Alicia Christian Ford in L.A., November 19th, 1962, from a wealthy family from Chicago. Her parents divorced at a very young age, so she had basically no interaction with her dad. But she was raised by her mom in L.A., and a very smart little girl. She learned to read at 3 years old and became, at a very young age, fluent in French, so fluent in French that she dubbed her own movies. She would do movies in French, and she would speak French in the movies. Later in life, she would act in French movies, and it would be her speaking the French parts.
Yeah, but she can also like speak sign language, and like she's mute and deaf.
Well, you're thinking of that gorilla that does that.
No, that's Nell. Wasn't that her in the movie Nell? Did she win an Oscar for that?
Well, I didn't have time to watch the movie. Sorry. She grew up, her mom was one of those people in L.A. that was like, you're going to be a movie star. And her, at a very young age, starting at 3 years old, she was in commercials and television shows, and she loved it. And later in life, when her mom got criticism for putting her in commercials and television shows, she defended her mom and said, well, it was my life. I loved it. It's part of who I am.
Okay.
In 1976, she was cast in Martin Scorsese's movie Taxi Driver, which is considered one of the greatest movies of all time. She was 12 years old, and she played a child prostitute, so it was a big deal at the time. Such a big deal that the Los Angeles Welfare Board initially refused to let her be in the movie due to its violent content. And the governor at the time, Governor Jerry Brown, intervened and said, okay, we'll have a psychiatrist assess her, make sure she's mentally able to be in the movie, because it was such a violent movie, an adult movie. So he intervened, even though the Los Angeles Welfare Board said, no, she's too young for this type of movie. It worked, and they said there has to be a social worker to accompany her on set during the making of this movie. And also, she can't do some of the... We need a stand-in for some of the more adult scenes. So her sister played her in a lot of the stand-ins for the more violent and sexual scenes. But it was a huge movie. Like I said, she was only 12 years old, and she was nominated for an Oscar. And not long afterwards, after that movie, which was her big breakout role, she was in Bugsy Malone in 1976.
I remember that, yeah.
And then in 1976, she was the youngest person to host SNL. And in 1977, she moved to France, lived there for 9 months, and started making French movies. And because she was so fluent and had such a good command of the French language, that she wasn't dubbed, she didn't need any additional training. So movies she did, and even later in life, movies she did in English, the French version, the dubbing, she would do it herself. So she would dub over her English and French. But she lived there for 9 months making French movies. And then in 1980, she became a Yale student. So Ivy League Yale student. Mm-hmm. And on her summer vacation, she would make movies. So this girl's like a workaholic at the time. And she was obsessed with kind of the craft of acting. When she was a freshman at Yale in 1980, she was stalked by a guy named John Hinckley Jr. And he was obsessed with her after watching Taxi Driver. And he actually moved to New Haven, Connecticut, where she went to school as a Yale student, and started wow. contacting her through letters and phone calls that she never responded to.
You know this story, right, Tony?
No.
No? Oh, it gets better.
So he was contacting her by letters and phone, and I don't think she ever, she never responded, and I don't think at the time she was even really aware of him. But he was obsessed with her so much that he shot Ronald Reagan and three other people to impress her. The entire reason he shot Ronald Reagan.
This is the fuck out of here.
John Hinckley Jr. This is the guy that shot Ronald Reagan.
I didn't know that because was the
reason. Wanted, he was so obsessed with
Jodie Foster
that he wanted to, if I do this, then she'll recognize me. She'll acknowledge me.
Do you think if she would have come out as a lesbian sooner, maybe he just would have never done that?
No, not necessarily, because no, he was obsessed with the movie Taxi Driver.
Right.
And Taxi Driver was a movie about...
I'm not trying to blame her. It's a bad joke.
Crazy.
Taxi Driver was a movie about a loner, violent Vietnam vet that he had similarities with. So yeah, at the time it was very traumatizing for her.
Because she was 20-something at that? She was born in 61, is that right?
She was 18.
18. So 18.
A freshman at Yale.
You're the president of the United States, nearly gets assassinated.
Somebody is so obsessed with and you your name because gets associated of a with movie that you made when you were 12 years old.
Yeah.
That they went and tried to assassinate and got crazy. Very close to killing the president. Like, that's very hard to deal with.
How do you process that? I don't know.
Well, she didn't very well because she became even more private and enclosed and didn't talk about it for years. But even though she wasn't talking about it, her actions were like she did very few interviews at the time and she became much, much, much more private. But the sad part is while she was at Yale, she had multiple stalkers even after that. There was one guy that committed.
She did?
Yes, there was one guy that committed to killing her. And he went to a place she was in at Yale to kill her.
That's crazy.
Saw her in the play and was so impressed by her that he decided not to kill her.
Wow.
And she later found out about it. And that was one of only, one of many, I should say, stalkers. Three proven, but that's way too many.
I mean, I don't mean this in any negative way, like, because it sounds petty when I say this, but she's not like the most attractive. I mean, she's attractive. She's
a very good actress, and she's not afraid to take roles that are sexual and dark.
Okay, I guess that's it. Because I'm like, what is it? Because it's not like people are like, oh, mesmerized by her looks. And again, I don't mean this in any derogatory way. She just doesn't have. She's not.
Well, in the movie Taxi Driver, she was playing a 12-year-old. I've left this out. Prostitute. So she was 12 years old. So she was a prostitute. Sexual. In the movie, it was very, like, realistic.
I've never seen that movie. I need to watch it.
I haven't either. And I'm just literally going by the descriptions, but I'm.
No, but I.
After doing the research, I'm determined to watch it because it seems. It's considered one of the greatest movies of all time.
Yeah, yeah,
but at the time, it was very controversial when she made that film because it was, how can you put a 12-year-old girl into this situation? Like, and her mom got a lot of flack because how dare you, like, put your daughter, like, that's dangerous. And her mom at the time was like, no, my daughter's an actress. This is a role. But she was stalked by several men at 18 because of that movie, and it kind of confirmed the fact that, yeah, it was dangerous all along.
I still don't know, though. Like, I mean, we've had this conversation before about, like, child actors. I'm like, there's a role that child actors play. I mean, but, because I feel like you're staunchly against it.
Yeah, I don't see that much good out of it.
All right.
Like, I don't think you should give a kid. Like, Jodie Foster started having a job where her mom did not work because her mom was her agent and her mom was depending on Jodie Foster
see,
working.
That, yeah. I feel,
but that's typically the norm.
Right.
But at 3 years old, you're in commercials? No.
Yeah.
That's not your decision.
Yeah.
Your mom has told you, we're going to go try out. This is what you need to do in this situation.
Yeah. A three-year-old isn't saying, I want to do this commercial. Like, I just...
No, they're being told what to do. But what is the right age?
6 and 7-year-old nephew, or they, those
Do you think they could make that decision?
Those kids are not...
Yeah.
I tricked them into putting rocks from changing my bricks from the middle of the yard to near my, but I had to pay him for it. But hey, I paid him an honest wage. I paid him.
So you're their child actor, basically.
I paid the equivalent of $15 an hour. The equivalent because they only worked for 30 minutes. But they moved all those rocks. And I was just kidding with them. I was like, hey, if you're going to be throwing these bricks, why don't you throw them in this nice pile next to the shed? And they sure did.
But they got paid. So.
But they didn't know they were getting paid. I just gave them that. I showed them the honest work.
But they had already picked your wallet and stolen money.
Probably. I didn't check my wallet. Meanwhile, they have, instead of $8, they have $108.
I think you shouldn't. If I were a parent, I would say you can't act until you're 18 and out of high school and you decide that's what you want to do. Otherwise, it's a career. No one should have a career.
Yeah.
And my first job was at 16 at McDonald's, but that was not a career. That was 15 hours a week.
Yeah.
Yep.
Spending money.
Look yeah, at, drinking look beer at
what's
with
going
my
on
boss.
With Brittany. Mm.
No, that's the first time I had alcohol. My McDonald's manager was drinking, said, hold this. You can have some if you want. And I drank it and then just prayed that, you know, I wouldn't be banished to hell forever. Little did I know I was born gay and it was already set in stone.
Too late. You gay. You gay, you going to hell. Just kidding.
So she became, because of that whole John Hinckley Jr. mess, of a guy trying to kill the president because of her, because he was so obsessed with her. She became a very private person. And after that, she was very, very choosy about her roles. And she was the it girl of Hollywood because she had a string of several hits at a very young age. And that's a lot of pressure on people. I would snap. I would be one of those child stars that was like messed up
like
for the rest
Britney.
Of her life. Thank I'd you. Be on meth.
This is why you can't make Kendall famous from this podcast.
I know.
That's why, like, we're just.
It'd be
he's always
story.
On the verge.
It'd I'm be like, a great eat true.
We're not ready for that.
I'd be like, y'all got some eggs?
I ain't got that much insurance.
Okay.
On this
he's
podcast.
He's always on the verge. Like
Listen Works does not have that.
No,
much.
I don't. I don't assume
to
I would
listen
snap.
Next week.
But in 1988, she was very picky about her roles. But in 1988, she was in the movie
That's
The Accused.
Sorry.
Where she was played a victim of a gang rape. It was about the victim blaming of her. And it was a big deal at the time, but it was also one of those roles that was kind of controversial because no one was talking about that. And it was another kind of sexualized role for her. Hmm. And then probably her biggest role ever was 1991.
Hello, Clarice.
Silence of the Lambs.
Yeah.
Which was a controversial movie because the serial killer in the movie was a bisexual serial killer.
Was it controversial at the time? It's
yes,
controversial
it
now.
Was. It I was mean, controversial because it was painting this bisexual man as dangerous and
was he classified
sexualized.
As bisexual or trans?
Bisexual. But it was also, the articles of the time were summed...
Hannibal or the actual murderer that they were?
The murderer.
Yeah.
Classified as bisexual, but some articles would just call him gay. And then there was a little bit of, we wouldn't call it trans now, but there was the element of gender, what do you want to call it?
Gender
confusion.
Bending, but
yeah.
Because there was a scene where he stuck his dick in between his legs, right? And he manifested a woman, right? I mean, he was a man that would dress up as a woman to some extent.
At the time, they were saying gay or bisexual because they might not have had the language to call it trans. Because remember,
same,
when we were younger, it was just, you're gay. There's no bi.
That's what I'm asking. Like, if
at the time, I can only say at the time. At the time, what they were saying, the controversy was that you're making this bisexual, but there's no representation for bisexual or gay people, really.
I don't even consider, like, to me, there's no evidence of him being bisexual. I mean, your topic is Jodie Foster, so I...
No, but in the movie, because I've read this before, we take a current 2020 viewpoint on it, is that why? How did they get bisexual or gay out of it?
But I remember watching the movie in the 90s, which
maybe but at the time they were them. That's what they were taking out of it. So that was what the gay bisexual community had to take on for that movie, and that was the controversy.
Oh, so the LGBTQ community at the time
complained. Saying, they were complaining at the time.
This is not proper bisexual.
And there were articles written, like in the Village Voice, saying they took it out on Jodie Foster. And said, well, she's a closet lesbian. Because, you know, she's living as a lesbian, but she's not out. Just like Ellen and Rosie. And
she was obviously a lesbian.
Ellen, Rosie, Melissa Etheridge, they were all lesbians for years. Like, known lesbians years before they actually told the media that I'm a lesbian. But there was a controversy at the time. Her biggest role before it came out, or right as it came out, that it's... making gay / bisexual people to look very dangerous. But the movie did so well that you had this kind of reverse effect that, oh my God, that's our closeted lesbian that's doing really well. And after that, that was her biggest role. And her icon status was kind of solidified after that. But she had a... like a lot of famous people go through a few years of her not being so famous, where she got into directing and she became even more private because she had a hit, she did not like it. So Silence of the Lambs was not like, oh, I'm just basking in the applause the glory that I've gotten from this. She became even more private, but that's what happens when you're in the closet. You don't want too much recognition. Yeah.
Which is sad. I mean, it would have been nice to have this Academy Award winning actress as a symbol for our community, but no, I mean, and you don't blame her. It's just like, there's just the reality of what it is. Like, you come out in 1991 or 92, whenever Silence of the Lambs came out, and you risk your whole career.
Yeah.
Right? So.
Well, and I think there's probably a sense that's, oh, you want me, you expect me to come out for you. I'm going to even go even more private and deeper into the closet.
Well, it's a couple of things, right? I mean,
to exert control over my own life.
You can't land another job. There's no roles for a leading lesbian lady, right? So, you mean you, everything's, especially in the 90s, it's rom-com, right? So you got nothing, no future jobs there. There are no gay roles, prominent gay roles.
She was in her 30s by then.
Yeah, so you just... you
soon to be 30s.
You don't have... she's
got... which back then was a death sentence.
Yep. So, I mean, I don't... It's sad, but I don't... like, you can't blame her, I guess. I mean, I could easily, for the 2020 lens, you'd be like, oh, you should have totally came out, but those were the circumstances she was
Well, I think she was a child star that... never really grew up.
I guess that was going to be my other point. She wasn't trained. She was not equipped to be an LGBTQ icon. I mean, as soon as she comes out, everyone's going to ask, what's it like to be gay in Hollywood?
Well, because once you're famous, other people own you.
She's like, I don't know what it's even like to be in Hollywood, much less a gay person in Hollywood. Like, why do I have to answer all the questions for all of the gay people in all the world? That's what she becomes.
From 1993 to 2008, she was in a relationship with a woman. And had two sons. Like I said, broke up with her in 2008. But in 2013, she came out at the Golden Globes when she got the Cecil B. DeMille Award.
Oh, nice.
And she made this big thing. It was cute at the time. I think we watched it together at the time.
Yeah, she came
out.
It was
weird.
It wasn't like...
but the way she came out was like, I know you've all been waiting to hear this. I'm paraphrasing. And I know... people have been waiting to hear this for a long time, but she drew it out and she said, I am single. And people were kind of like laughing. But she said, but in actuality, I won't be coming out because that already happened years ago when I came out to friends in very vulnerable settings. So she came out without saying, I'm gay.
A lesbian.
Yeah.
Because why be forced to come out? I completely get it. That would make me not want to come out.
Yeah.
That would make me stay in the closet even longer. In 2014, she married photographer Alexandra Hedison. And she's an atheist, and she raised her kids. I like this part. she celebrates. She's like, yeah, I'm an atheist, but we celebrate Christmas. We celebrate Kwanzaa. We celebrate Hanukkah, Easter, all these, because nice. I want to teach my kids about religion and let them understanding. Yeah. She actually said, because religion has so much to do with the wars that we've experienced in this country, I at least need to let my kids understand about the religion that is going to have so much of an impact on their life, whether they choose to go down that path or not.
I feel like
it's so true.
What you just said, that I feel like we should pin to the top of our listen list, because I've had plenty of friends who are like, I can't listen to your podcast anymore because of your religious views. Christians don't hate gay people. But I'm like, you're the people that Christians in quotes often support Republicans do not care for our rights of the LGBT
or
community.
Even I don't even think it's a lot of times that it's that you're so unimportant that, okay, I mean, other than the gay thing, I mean, I've had my own family members. Other than the gay thing, can't you just get over that? Because
you mean get over the gay thing?
Yeah. But that's Jodie still.
Jodie Foster.
Being a living legend.
She is. She's
the legend that is Jodie.
The legend that is Jodie Foster. Well, thank you, Kendall, for talking to us.
Oh, you're welcome.
About Jodie.
Get over the gay thing.
We'd like to thank our sponsor, Economy Works. Need help with marketing? Hire a freelancer. You need help building a website? Hey, hire a freelancer. If you need help with benchmarking and analysis, what would you want to do? Hire a freelancer.
Uh-huh. That's unexpected.
Unexpected. Economy Works believes in the power of connection and wants to connect you with its talent network. The talent network has over 1,000 years of experience. We hit a milestone. 1,000 years of experience. And it's growing in marketing, HR, IT, accounting, and other specialties. Economy Works. When we work, the economy works. You can find out more at economyworks.com. That's economyworks.com. Guys. Carly. Ray Jepsen. I just say that because that's who I'm going to talk about. And that is a some sort of little viral video on YouTube that my little partner,
she's got a cult following,
fiance,
sure.
Loves. I'm going to talk about this Canadian pop princess who was born on November 21st, 1985. Of course, she follows in the long line of other Canadian divas. Canadian divas come to mind. What are... Let's name them. Let's name the Canadian divas that come to mind.
Well, there's only Celine.
Only Celine. No one else?
Martin Short.
Martin Short. Who else? Come on, we got others.
William Shatner.
You're naming every dude out there.
Well, there's Michael J. Fox.
Alex Trebek.
Dan Aykroyd.
Dan Aykroyd.
Catherine O'Hara.
Canadian divas.
John Candy.
Singers. How about that? Celine Dion. What else? Come on.
No, we don't know.
Alanis Morissette? No? You want to know Alanis Morissette.
I know her, but I wouldn't have thought of that.
Shania Twain?
Oh, yeah. Shania Twain. Love her.
You're still the one I love?
Pamela Lee.
Is she Canadian? Mm-hmm. I don't think she is.
Yeah, she grew up in Trailer Park.
Avril Lavigne. All right, Canadian divas. Carly Rae Jepsen. Carly Rae Jepsen, like I said, was born in 1985. We know her from what song? Come on, why do we know her?
Making My Way Downtown.
No. I'm doing this for the young gays, not for you old gays who obviously don't know who the F Carly Rae Jepsen is.
No, I know her. I know her name.
Well, how do you know her name?
She's an international drag superstar.
No, she's an international pop superstar. We know her from Call Me Maybe.
Oh, okay.
Hey, I just met you. This is crazy. So here's my number.
Yeah.
So call me maybe. Again, born in 1985. That song was released way back in 2011. Almost 10 years ago.
Too soon.
too soon. She took over our lives. So that song was released in 2011. It became really popular in 2012. And since then, she's graced us with 5 albums. Most recently, she graced us with a wonderful pop album, dedicated Site B. And she's even released a Christmas album. So that's how you know she's a true diva. You release a Christmas album, you diva.
Well, why didn't she tell anybody?
You're not on her playlist. That's all right. Don't worry about it. Growing up, she was born in British Columbia. She was born to 2 teachers. She attended performing arts college before swerving into pop. She's a prolific songwriter. She loves to write songs. Like she's a person who's like unable to go a day without writing.
Oh my God, that's a burden.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's one of those things that it's an art she's passionate about. I'm talking about her because, look, us 40 and 38-year-old gays may not appreciate it, but the young gays love Carly Rae Jepsen. And it's not just because of Carly, Call Me Maybe. They really, really love her. Of course, the Canadians love her because she came up through Canadian Idol, the equivalent of American Idol.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah. I don't know. So you guys know, have you, Spencer, obviously you guys have heard Carly Rae Jepsen, may not remember her, but Spencer has like made you listen to her.
Okay, we believe you.
But how, what, I mean, because I was going to ask, I was going to say, how would you describe her sound? Because I would describe her sound.
Shrieking.
No. I like she gives me a little bit of Kylie vibes, Kylie Minogue.
Well, am I allowed to not be a fan of her sound?
Sure. Totally. Okay, like, if you don't like her, that's fine. But like, there are people.
Do you mind if I leave your objectivity?
Bye, bitch. Like, she gives me a bit of a Taylor Swift vibe. Robin, you like Robin?
Oh yes, Robin.
So she's got.
Can we talk about her instead?
She's got all those vibes, but she again. Made her splash with Canadian Idol. She was like Kelly Clarkson in terms of like the fame of Idol, but was like more Jennifer Hudson in the sense that she didn't win and still was freaking popular. She, even though she's this like huge popular star, like musical star, she also acts. And she was not like one of those like Demi Lovato or Selena Gomez who like, or Miley Cyrus, like, I started in Disney, like, and then came to be a singer. She was singing at the top of her career and decided, like, I'm going to take a break and do Broadway. I'm going to be Cinderella. So if you're Cinderella on Broadway and you're Canadian, that's kind of a big deal, right?
If you're Canadian Cinderella fan.
But my point is, like, you got some skills. If you're going to, like, Broadway is going to do a revival of Cinderella.
It's a big deal.
And you are going to be the singer. Like, you're going to be freaking Cinderella.
For Cinderella, yeah.
It's one thing if you're, like, the mouse, like, or the flying broom or something like that. But
okay, so she lost a shoe.
Haven't we all? Martha. No, I'm just kidding. Martha.
I just don't know much about her.
Well, I'm telling you about her. She also played, because she acts and sings. She was Frenchie on Grease Live.
Okay, now we're talking.
Oh, no way.
So that, because you know how TV, like in the last 5 years, we've thought it collectively good to do like live versions of Grease,
Impeachment Sound of
Music. Right before that. Okay, yeah.
Sound
Impeachment. There was also hearings. Another one.
Cats. Rent. No, Rent. Yeah.
Rent, yeah.
It's not that. But she was, when they were still good, and we were doing Grease Live, she was Frenchie. So she got a lot of praise for that. She's done the voiceover work on animated live movie, which is Leap. Look, this woman has produced 5 studio albums. She's released a number of EPs, 26 Whoa. Singles. But of course, we know her for Call Me Maybe. Why is Call Me Maybe iconic? Talk to me, ladies. Talk to me. You've seen the video, yeah? Tony's never seen the video.
I've never seen it.
We might be the wrong crowd.
You've never seen the video either? You've seen the video.
I know the song, though.
The Call song came out maybe. In 2012. She's like, hey, I just met you. So the video, right? So yeah. the video, right?
I wish they could see the hand movement.
So does she want him to call her maybe? I mean, well,
she's hitting on some guy, right? So this song, for context, came out on her EP Curiosity, was released on her album Kiss. All right, so it was supposed to be a folk song, so it was starting off like this country song, but you know it, so you know the song, yes, at least you know the song. Hey, it's very poppy, it's bubblegum pop.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so they turned it into a pop song. It was originally released in Canada, and then the Biebs and his girlfriend at the time, you may have heard of her. You
okay.
may have heard, fellow Canadian Justin Bieber and his girlfriend
Selena
Gomez. They were in Canada and heard the song, and they were like, they did this lip sync version of it on Twitter. They released it on their social media accounts, and then the song blew up. But there was also this video, which is why we love Justin Bieber and Selena Gomez, but it was the video, I think, that really kind of like the gays were like, we love this video. Because if you've never seen the video, she's it's about, so the song's about, is a pickup song. Hey, call me maybe. Hey, I just met you. This is crazy.
Yeah.
Here's my number. Call me maybe. So she's trying to pick up on this boy. So it's set up as this boy meets girl storyline. She sees a hot neighbor. He takes his shirt off. He's really hunky. Her band,
she's waiting for the neighbor to,
well, she's in her garage, like with her band, and they're playing music, and her band members are like, go hit on him. So she's like, okay, I'm going to go wash the car. And she tries to do it in a very sexy way. She falls off because she's kind of she's playing the role of a dork. No.
Yeah.
She's playing the role of a dorky girl. So she falls off, knocks out. She has this fantasy of her meeting like this neighbor, like coming together and living happily ever after. She finally comes to, and she's like, okay, she gets back to rehearsing with her band, and she's like, she ends her practice, and she's like, okay, I'm gonna give this guy my number. So she turns around and writes the number on this piece of paper, and then when she turns around to give it to the guy's giving his number to one of her bandmates. A guy.
No way.
The guy was gay. Her crush was gay. A homosexual.
What could not have seen him?
Well, why didn't you think the gay? Of course the gays were going to. This is happening in 2012. The gays are going to love her. Like, we were like, yes, queen. Can I do guess. It? Can you give me a yes, queen? You don't remember this? Come on, Kendall. Like, I
remember the song.
I remember watching this video on the green couch in Virginia. No. It was with Martha. Anyways. She
I'm from a different era.
She's literally the gay icon of America. No, but that was a like, big deal. Like, because there was not, it was very like cheeky and poppy, and like I remember all the gays getting very excited about like this girl right here who we don't know, who just put a video out where she's like, oh my gosh, I love this guy, and this guy just came around and turned around and said, I like your bandmate who's a boy. And gay. And the gays were like, bleep. Anyways, it was a big deal. Obviously.
I love it.
Because there were two gays in a video?
Yeah, because we didn't see that sort of stuff. And it was like, it wasn't just like two gays in a video. Because, listen, Katy Perry had done shit. Like, all these people. Madonna. Lady Gaga, Madonna. But it was very much like this girl. It was sweet in the sense, like, this poor little girl was like, I just like this boy. And then she was like, well, I guess he's gay. And it was actually
she learned a lesson that day.
I think to me, the takeaway from that video was like, that happens now. Like, before it didn't happen, you were like, that gay guy would have like stared at that band member for a long time and maybe waited to see him in the bathroom and then blew him. But now she was showing like in 2012, what happens is that phone number exchanges and he's
But
not
then
shy.
Those men got married. In the closet. Okay.
No, but anyway, so that happened. But of course, the song was like a viral hit. Aside from the video, it was so poppy, bubblegummy. Like if you guys, I'm gonna take you back to 2012. There were like military videos, like the guys from military men in Afghanistan that were doing lip syncs to this. Katy Perry did it. The Harvard baseball team did it. The ET fashion hosts were all like doing this. This is one like, hey, let's do coordinated YouTube videos. That was the thing. So this song was very popular. Of course, she has like cemented other songs. I Really Like You, Emotion, Cut to the Feeling, I Just Didn't Come Here to Dance, Party for One. These are all songs that have been very popular. Of course, none of them, like Call Me Maybe was a number one hit. all these other songs, while still popular, the gays who I'm talking to on this podcast, not you two, the ones that are listening to this, know what I'm talking about.
Not so much, yeah.
But they didn't crack the number, like, the top 10. She actually hasn't released a top 10 hit since, for a very, very, very long time. Since Call Me Maybe. But yet, she's still considered a gay icon. Her fans, the little gypsies, love her. Why do you think she's called... Why is she a gay icon? Anyone guesses? No? Nothing?
The video?
No.
The video was a little bit... But people like her because... She is like, yes, it's the Call Me Maybe video, but she's kind of got this underdog swagger about her. Like, she's super cute, super fun. Like, again, she hasn't released a top 10 single in a long time, but she's still like,
that's okay.
In May of this year, 2020, during the pandemic, she released her dedicated B-sides, which is dedicated is the album she released last year. And then she dropped another album during the pandemic, and the gays were like, ah, they loved it.
I remember this, yeah.
Yeah, they're like, why did the gays like her? She looks
Tony
like,
loves her now.
She just looks like she's having fun. Like, she's humble, she's genuine, people are rooting for her. And it's not like, people root for Gaga, but Gaga strikes this confidence. People root for Britney. In the sense, like, I guess in the same vein as they would for Carly Rae. They're like this sweet, innocent, they're good people inside their heart. And I think that's what really attracts the gays to Carly Rae Jepsen. She's a person who just, I feel like Britney too, despite all the knocks on Britney, there's this sense of like joy about her. And so people
vulnerability,
and they get very protective of her. So I mean, despite her, again, and I don't mean I don't, because you were right to say, yeah, we don't care that she hasn't had a top 10. You would think commercially, if she would sell a lot of albums. The gays, I mean, if you pay attention to gay Twitter, anytime Carly Rae Jepsen says something, they absolutely love her. So which
we
is
we get a day off.
Yeah. It's a holiday. Like,
I
Gaga,
wish you'd talk more.
She. I mean, Carly Rae Jepsen stacks up there in the gay world next to Beyonce, Gaga, like Madonna, and she doesn't have nearly as many of the record sales or albums out there. But hey, she's doing the thing, so we appreciate a Carly Rae Jepsen. And honestly, if I have to be in full disclosure, like I said with the economy works thing earlier, my fiance's Canadian. He forced me to talk about his Canadian diva, so I had to do it.
Oh my god!
He didn't force me to, but I felt it was appropriate to pay homage to, because
you
I was bewildered though, because she is continuously popular on the gay Twitter scene, and I'm like, what is the deal? It's exactly. We love her. Carly Rae Jepsen is our topic today. So we're gonna close out with "Call Me Maybe." We're gonna play the song. No, we don't have this. We don't.
Oh,
have the
that's
song
expensive.
Right. We don't have the song right. So
even though it's a Carly Rae song,
we have to pay extra for that. We don't have that many sponsors. We love our sponsors, but we're not paying. We're not getting those sponsor dollars yet, where we can pay for a Carly Rae Jepsen song. All right. Well, thank you everyone for listening to our episode, our podcast this week, Kiki-ing with us. We love having fun with you guys every week. A special thank you to the guy who keeps our sound in check, Spencer. Spencer is part of our Spoopy podcast, along with Chris. They do our Spoopy podcast, all things true crime, murder, mystery, all things scary. They also do a little podcast called Our Rupee Podcast. So if you like drag stuff, like drag queens and drag culture and RuPaul's Drag Race recaps, that's where they are. You can find them at Our Rupee Podcast. Don't forget to subscribe to us so you can hear future episodes. You can visit our website at letstalkaboutgaystuff.com. You can follow us on Facebook and Instagram at Let's Talk About Gay Stuff, and on Twitter at Talk Gay Stuff. You can also leave us a review and tell us what you think. If you're scared, you don't want to do it in public because you pee when you sit down, we're fine with that. You can leave us an email at letstalkaboutgaystuff@gmail.com. All right, we're part of the ListenWorks Network, and with that, we're here.
We're queer.
Get used to it.